Number 17-4100, Critchfield versus Blazin' Wings.
May it please the court, Daniel Birch for Appellant Critchfield. The trial court's ruling never totally made sense to me. And in studying Exhibit 1 to Critchfield's deposition, I think I understand why. I believe the trial court misunderstood the exhibit. And so I'd like the panel, as you consider the briefing again and discuss it, to consider the possibility that the trial court misunderstood the direction from which Critchfield was approaching.
This is an exhibit to Critchfield's deposition.
Exhibit 1. It's right. Appellant's appendix.
And it's as
136.
What you're showing us there is as the exhibit appears in the deposition, at the back of the deposition transcript.
Exactly. This is Appellant's appendix, page 136.
Okay.
So the trial court faulted Critchfield for not going to the right-hand urinal or to the toilet stalls. Now, that only makes sense if you assume that Critchfield is approaching from the direction of the photographer. But that's not correct. The door is in the upper right-hand corner. Critchfield walked, by his testimony, three or four steps in from the door. He's not past the yellow warning cone. He's almost to the first urinal. He hangs a hard left, taking baby steps, as he put it, urinates, and then turns directly back to wash his hands at the sink. So if you think of it this way, Critchfield's testimony that the only place he knew was wet makes total sense. He only knew this area was wet because that's the only area he ever walked over.
Did you make this argument in your brief? I don't recall it. You made right. this argument.
I did not.
I think your argument had more to do with the affidavit that he filed later, reversing what he said about the only area he knew to be wet was this area. He then said the whole floor was wet. That's what the appeal is about.
He didn't reverse himself, though, is what I'm saying.
Well, maybe we should get to that issue, because I don't see where this issue that you're raising now about the perspective from which we should view an exhibit was even argued.
Well, I mean...
Or that the trial court considered
that. I didn't realize
that
the trial court had probably misunderstood the exhibit. I mean, in my mind, you know, it makes sense to me as I'm arguing it.
When did you get that realization? Last night before oral argument?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, bear with me, please. Bear with me.
Well, I am, but I'm concerned that...
How would I know that the trial court was thinking something completely different and wrong?
Well, because,
in my mind, it made sense.
Because you've had the trial court's decision for how long, and you've had all this time to think about it. You've briefed the issue. You've looked through the entire record multiple times. That indicates to me that you should have thought about it before last night.
Well, with all due respect, the exhibit was, to me, plain on its face. And so for me to finally understand where the trial court's going wrong, I don't think that that's my fault. It seems plain to me that the trial court's looking at the exhibit wrong. And if that's the case, then
that could have been argued. If it wasn't briefed to the trial court, you should have immediately asked for rehearing, reconsideration.
I said,
wait a minute here. I know you're talking about deposition testimony and affidavits, but you're looking at this photograph wrong.
I didn't. I mean, how would I?
I'm just saying, I think you've waived that argument at this point.
As I'm arguing it at the trial court level, I'm not understanding that she's looking at the exhibit wrong. I didn't get that. I mean, how would I know that? I mean, I'm looking at it the right way. I'm sorry?
You would have known about it by applying the same thought process that you did last night.
I thought the trial court was saying that he should have walked around to the stalls or the urinal, which makes no sense. And so that's why I kept arguing.
And your point is that there is no path to any place for him to relieve himself except through water. Is that your point?
Well, my point is that it's foreseeable that he would take the most direct path to the first urinal. That's very foreseeable. That's actually a legal question here, is,
well, okay, to my
was that
point,
foreseeable?
So this theory that came to you last night does not negate the proposition that there was a dry path some way, albeit circuitous, from the door to a receptacle where he could relieve himself.
No.
Bear
with me just a minute, please. Critchfield testified, appellants 124, that the manager admitted that it was human waste that had been mopped up. Where would the human waste come from? The toilets. And it would have been mopped from the toilets forward, apparently, to where Critchfield encountered the wetness at the door. So there really was no, and the other point I make in support of that, Your Honor, is that the warning sign, the caution sign, is right in the middle of the room. And so that, again, suggesting that the entire area is wet. So there's no contradiction in Critchfield's testimony.
So the answer to my question is,
there was no dry area.
Now that there was no dry path, circuitous or otherwise,
correct,
from the door to a urinal or a toilet.
Correct. And that's what I argued, that's what the affidavit or the declaration of Critchfield said, is that the entire area was wet. That's the exact argument I made to the district court. It's the argument I'm making here. It's what Critchfield said. So when the trial court said there is a dry area, it didn't make sense. Well, I understand now, I think, why she thought that. But I just don't feel like that's my fault, that I didn't understand her error sooner. In any event, the real precise legal question here is whether it was foreseeable that Critchfield would come in from the door, three or four steps in, realize it's soapy, and then proceed to that first urinal. If that was foreseeable, summary judgment was wrong. And I think it's the most foreseeable thing for someone to do, coming in from the door, to go to that first urinal. The most foreseeable thing. The next most foreseeable thing, I guess, would be to pass the first urinal and go to the second one. The least foreseeable thing would be for someone to enter the door, pass the warning cone, and go to a toilet stall to urinate. That's the most unforeseeable thing. And yet that was what the trial court's order was based upon. So I don't think the evidence in the record supports judgment as a matter of law on foreseeability of the course that Roland Critchfield actually took. That's the summary judgment standard here. And I've tried this case to jury. Sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. But I guess that's my point. It's for the jury to sort out these very sorts of arguments. I cite a bunch of cases, a lot of cases around the country, similar fact scenarios, soapy water on the restroom floor, jury question. There's a few cases that say, well, if you don't know who put the soap on the floor, summary judgment might be appropriate on notice. Here we know that the store put the soapy water on. That was assumed by the trial court. The other thing that I wanted to raise is the issue of spoliation of the employee records so that we could identify the employee that did the mopping. That employee could certainly clarify how much of the area had been mopped or why it was mopped. Was it human waste flowing from the toilets? In which case, the entire floor would have been wet and soapy.
Wait a minute. The spoliation that you're talking about is destruction of the video.
Not just the video. They spoliated the employee. They spoliated the inspection records and the employee records that would show who the employee was that mopped the floor. The video would have shown who the employee was too. They all would have led us to the employee that did the mopping, who could have then clarified this entire issue that we seem to be struggling with, is how much of the floor was mopped. So I think it was a critical spoliation and warranted sanctions against Buffalo Wild Wings.
Well, the video, my understanding is the video would have showed the hallway.
Would have shown who went in and out.
So all we'd get from that is
who went in and out.
But we
would know the last employee to go in and out.
Right. And then
And that's what we would know.
The other records would show who cleaned it when.
Mm-hmm.
But
the inspection or cleaning log.
Nothing about that document itself.
Nothing about
those two pieces of evidence would show anything about how much water was on the floor or where the water was.
They would show who did the mopping, and presumably that witness would know what the mopping was that they did.
So if this was so material, it seems odd to me that you never even did a request for production. You never asked for the video. You never asked
they
for
They told
the,
me they didn't have it.
All right.
They
when,
told me.
And they told
the
you that when? What's in the record about that?
I'm sorry?
When did you ask for it?
Oh, early on. I mean,
how?
Well, in advance of the close of discovery.
Was it in a pleading? So that it's a matter of
it
record?
It was not in the form of a request for production. It was in the form of a letter to counsel about. I sent a spoliation letter, for one thing, pre-suit. I sent a spoliation letter, and then in correspondence with counsel, I take counsel at their word. If they say they don't have evidence, I take them at their word.
Well, that's fine, Mr. Birch. But
I'm sorry?
We're not dealing with counsel's word. We're dealing with a record.
It's in the record.
The letter's in the record?
Yeah, we place those in the record.
Okay. All right. And you presented your arguments to the district court, the magistrate judge.
Correct.
Acting there. And the magistrate judge ruled in that hearing, didn't she?
Not in the hearing. Well, she took it under advisement.
Well, but she said what she was going to do, didn't she?
Only in part.
Well, okay, so part. She said in part what she's going to do, right?
Well, right, but I mean,
Is the record of that hearing before us?
The record of the hearing, the argument per se is not in front of you, no.
And
the result
therefore,
the
ruling
record.
Of the district court, the partial ruling of the district court, is also not before us.
The ruling of the district court is before us.
Well,
she
no,
denied
there, there's a minute entry. I'm talking about what the court said as a partial ruling that was on the transcript is not before us.
Correct. The transcript of the hearing is not before us. I don't take just kind of the colloquy at a hearing when it's taken under advisement as any sort of a final ruling that I can appeal from. I did not understand.
Well,
it
you're
that
used
way.
To minute entries, aren't you? Where the minute entry just says granted or denied.
Minute entries are not a final ruling, appealable ruling.
All right. She didn't say anything more about this other than denied.
No, she said it was a limited. It was not a
I mean,
complete
in writing,
denial.
In writing, she just said denied.
No, in writing, she said deny. I'm going to probably deny it, or I'm going to deny it in part, but not in total. That's why it was under advisement.
Okay. When she gave the advice and she issued her decision, she just said denied.
Correct. When she
that's
finally
my point.
Decided.
In writing, all it says is denied.
Denied. At the very end, that's all we got was denied. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors. Cody Kessler on behalf of Blazin' Wings. To start right in with a couple of issues that were raised, I don't really know what to do with the new argument about the direction of the viewing of the photograph. I agree with what the court was alluding to. That's an argument not briefed. I would argue that is clearly waived on appeal.
Well, let me ask you this. The record as it is, does the record indicate in an undisputed fashion that there was a path that was dry to a urinal or a toilet?
Yes, the material facts as found by the district court said accepted Critchfield's testimony that the floor was soapy and wet in front of one urinal marked by a yellow sign and that the restroom contained another urinal and a toilet. So, yes, it identified the specific area of the unidentified liquid.
Well, that doesn't mean that the other areas were not wet. It just says that it was wet around the urine.
Well, and we're dealing with material facts here, and that's what Judge First spent regarding the declaration, the affidavit. She spent 5 pages of her order analyzing that issue, detailing exactly what Critchfield could allege through that affidavit and what he could not. His personal knowledge gave him the ability to testify as to the puddle that he drew on that picture in the deposition testimony. He can't speculate.
Well, but his deposition testimony, he did limit it by saying what I know. He answered the question, as I recall, I don't have that right in front of me, but he said what I know was wet. I think something along that lines.
Correct, yeah.
And the way I read what the district court did was then to interpret that as only that he testified that only this area was wet, therefore there would be a path around. That's how I read the district court's testimony.
Correct. His testimony was in response to a question.
Do you think that's a fair reading of the district court of his testimony, putting the affidavit, which does seem to contradict that, because now he then knows later that the whole floor was wet.
Right.
So there is a contradiction there, but I'm wondering if we just look at the deposition, does it support the district court's ruling?
It supports it in that that's all we have to go off of to establish these material facts. Critchfield presented no additional evidence to demonstrate that the rest of the restroom floor was wet or dry. He testified to his personal knowledge as to what was wet. The material facts can only be established based on that testimony that he gave. That's all the evidence that was put forth. As you correctly noted, Critchfield declined to engage in informal discovery. He didn't seek any of these items that he alleged were spoliated.
He was referring to a letter that he sent you that he said he, I think I'm understanding correctly, that he asked for the video and the records of the bathroom cleaning. Can you tell me more about that?
Correct. That letter was sent. I don't have the exact time frame before. I do believe
before
it was,
discovery closed.
I do believe it was before fact discovery closed.
Did you respond?
Yes, we responded in that the video had been overwritten in the normal course of business. The cleaning logs had been destroyed in the normal course of business. We also responded with addressing some of the allegations about his litigation hold letter. That came some 8 months after the accident. Now, the issue of this sanctions motion isn't substantively before the court for review on whether the standards for sanctions would be met. We don't have facts on whether, or we don't at least have a decision for you to review on whether it was foreseeable, the litigation was foreseeable, the relevance of this evidence. But yes, that letter was sent and we responded. Again, Critchfield followed up with no formal discovery. He did not put that on the record. He didn't put it before the court.
In the letter requesting information, were personnel documents, were they requested too?
I do not believe so. I believe the materials requested were the videos, the security footage, the cleaning logs, and then some filed data. The
personnel records were destroyed.
The cleaning logs for who would have been in the bathroom was destroyed.
There were still records indicating, the following people were employed at this establishment on that day. Those were available.
Yes, and that was one of the responses we gave is access to that in response to their motion for sanctions is access to that information was available via other means, even if the cleaning log or the video was destroyed, had they conducted discovery on those points, access to that information could have been sought through other means, and they simply declined to do so. So regarding foreseeability, which is the standard here, obviously a landowner owes a duty to its invitees, but in the case of obvious or known dangers, the danger itself is that warning. Typically that duty would require a warning, but the danger itself is that warning. The test for whether a duty exists is outlined in the restatement. That is the legal test for duty. And on summary judgment, that question is a question of law that's appropriate for the court to resolve. Notwithstanding the digest of cases provided in Critchfield's reply, there is not a single case in Utah, in the Tenth Circuit, that says that duty inquiry is not a question of law and is not appropriate for the court to resolve on summary judgment. Judge First at the district court correctly did that. She found the material facts. She found that based on those material facts, it was unreasonable for Blazing Wings to assume that someone walking into a restroom presented with a harm that Critchfield admitted that he recognized in the form of an unidentified puddle on the ground. And that's important. The court adopted or accepted all the inferences in favor of Critchfield. She accepted that the floor was soapy. But the standard she used when ruling on the matter was an unidentified puddle of liquid on the floor. Lower than the soapy standard, it is just the foreseeability of a person walking into a restroom, seeing an unidentified puddle of liquid on the floor, and having other options available to them, would nonetheless choose to proceed to walk into that puddle and encounter that danger. Given the circumstances, and it is a facts and circumstances inquiry, Judge First was correct in concluding that it simply wasn't foreseeable for Blazing Wings to anticipate that someone in Critchfield's position was going to do that. Thank you.
Thank you, Counsel.
Critchfield never said that there was any dry area. That's simply an inference that was drawn against Critchfield. It should have been drawn in favor of Critchfield. There's no other evidence at summary judgment as to the dryness or wetness of the rest of the floor. Again, to the question of whether the entire floor was wet, this is from page 6 of the trial court's ruling, quoting from Critchfield's deposition, the question from Blazing. Now, with respect to the spread of water, as you recall it today, is there any way we can draw an area where the water would have been on the day of the incident or the evening of the incident to reflect where the floor was wet all the way from, you know, a tile or two or four to the entire floor? I mean, do you remember the area you think was wet? Answer, that I know was wet. So the question of whether the entire floor was wet was very much in play. It was just never specifically, clearly question and answer in the deposition. I do criticize the question answer. I mean, these are long questions. Critchfield rambled. I'll give him, that was another problem as well. And so you just don't have a clear-cut position by a litigant that then they reverse. This is a very ambiguous record.
Finish. Your time is up.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, counsel, and you're excused, and we'll take the matter under advisement. Appreciate your argument today. And the court will be in recess until tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. Thank you.